Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley. We're coming to you live from the Bustos Media Studios at KVOI Radio and streaming live on Facebook and YouTube at 1030 The Voice. We're going to celebrate some great people today. We have some members of the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame with us this morning. First, we have Dale Lopez. Good morning, Dale.
Good morning, Ed.
We have Chris Fanning.
Good morning.
And Walt Haywood.
Good morning.
Those two gentlemen are newly elected members of the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame. Dale, you're the vice president. For listeners who may not be familiar, can you tell us a little bit, Dale, about the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame and its mission here in Southern Arizona?
The Pima County Sports Hall of Fame was started in 1980 by a gentleman, Al Tsai. He was basically the one who got it started, and he decided that Pima County was full of individuals who have contributed to sports, and they should be recognized forever. And he got that Hall of Fame started. Now we have nearly 400 members.
So that's 45 years worth of recognition. We have an interesting class that's being inducted this year. As you look at the 2025 inductees, you might want to mention a couple of them, but what stands out to you and what makes this class special?
We have a great class this year. It's very diverse. We have basketball players and cyclists and coaches and football players, and we're recognizing two championship teams, Sunnyside 92-93 boys basketball team, which went undefeated 29-0, and the Catalina Foothills 96-97 girls basketball team, which also won the state championship, going 31-2.
That's great. And so this week, Thursday at the Doubletree Hotel at Reed Park, we had the press conference announcing the winners, and that was a pretty nice little event. Delano Price was doing his Pat Sajak impersonation, did a great job of interviewing the inductees.
He did, and anyone can go to our website, PCSHF, Pima County Sports Hall of Fame, PCSHF.org, and watch that press conference.
Who is your amazing president that is the president of the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame?
Okay, World Series champion Pat Darcy is our president. Kathy Crucker is our secretary, and Judy McDermott is our treasurer.
And you're the vice president.
And I'm the vice president.
You're the motley crew that runs the whole bunch, and you guys did a great job at the press conference the other day, and we'll talk in just a minute about the induction ceremony. Chris Fanning, you're welcome, and you're a longtime legacy at Sarita High School. You came from there, and you came back to there. You're, what did you say? Welcome back, Cotter. You were there the whole
Absolutely.
Time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, when did you go to Sarita? What years were you in?
I graduated in 1986.
86. And then was it fairly new at that point?
I believe 67 was the first year. So
right.
20 years or so, and went on to New Mexico State, and then taught 1 year in El Paso, and then had the opportunity to come back and teach at my my old school.
And you've been there teaching. What do you teach? What's your subject? When people ask, this is so stupid, but when people ask me what I teach at the U of A, I say students. So I realize what you're teaching at Sarita is students, but what was your specialty?
Math. I was a math teacher. I was also our athletic director for 10 years, and in that time, I was an assistant principal for 3 years, and I had to give up the softball position. Right. I gave up the assistant principal job to kind of get back into teaching and coaching, but math has been the subject, and I just recently retired from teaching this past May.
Yeah, congratulations to you for a great career in the teaching side, which is the most important part of what you do down there. And I met you back when you were the athletic director. I think you were the vice principal at the time, too.
Correct.
And when we played in the Coaches for Charity Kickoff Classic. So your recognition is that among all the many things you did, leading so many wonderful people in their lives, you had over 600 softball victories, the most in Southern Arizona history. That's an amazing stat. How did you do that?
Well, number one is I've been blessed to have a lot of talent. In softball, pitching kind of is the name of the game, and it just seems like when one pitcher graduates, another one steps in and does the job, and I've just been blessed with a lot of talent. We have a good ASA developmental program you know, at the lower levels, 8 under, 10 under, 12 under, and so on. So I've been blessed that I've had great assistant coaches. My brother has helped me coach for pretty much all 30 of the years. And throughout the course of the years, I've had a couple of volunteer assistants that have helped me that their daughters have played for me, and then they wanted to help out. So Doyle Fleck has been one. And it's just been, you know, I've just been blessed that I've been fortunate to have a lot of talent come through the place.
Did you have some talent move on to D1 schools and softball across the country?
Quite a few. D1, Yvette Alvarez went on. She pitched at Pima College, pitched them to a national championship. While she was there, she went on to play at Indiana State. Haley Tenori went on to play at New Mexico State. And I've had many girls play at Pima.
Right.
And then different schools. But I had the total at one time, but I think it's between 30 and 40 that have gone on to play at various levels.
Which is kind of in and of itself even all high schools in Tucson send people on. But as we talk about when you had the football teams playing in the Coaches for Charity Kickoff Classic, for a lot of those students, it's their last hurrah. A lot of them don't go on to junior college or community college or even to major Division I schools. The occasional one. So most students in their sports career and competitive intercollegiate sports, interscholastic sports, and that don't go on to college. They play intramurals and stuff. So it's good that you have 30 or 40. That's great. Also with us this morning is Walt Haywood. Good morning again, Walt.
Good morning.
You are an outstanding high school athlete at Santa Rita High School. You were an Eagle.
So, yes, sir.
What years did you go to?
1975 to 1979.
Great. Well, you were there when we were over at Palo Verde, so you were contemporaries, and I think we beat you in every single sport that we had. I think, and I'm just teasing.
Except track.
Basketball.
There you go. So, Walt, you were an amazing, amazing athlete. You had state titles in long jump and the 200 meters, the 4x100 relay. And then you went on to ASU to win two Pac-10 titles in the 4x100 relay. What stands out to you most about your athletic time in high school and then again in college, and how that kind of manifested itself in your life over the last several years?
I'd say that with my career, it started with my parents, and then it blossomed with a family environment with every team that I was on, starting at Naylor Junior High. Mm-hmm. We had a team environment. Then I went on to Santa Rita. We had a team environment, and we were all pulling for each other the entire time for every competition, practice, getting up at like 6 in the morning and being out there to train. And then going on to Pima, each athlete, you know, had the family environment, and we pulled for each other. And when I went on to Arizona State, it was pretty much the same thing. And I got the opportunity to train and run and compete with some very good athletes.
Mm-hmm. As yourself. And thank you. Just like Chris Fanning, you had some great coaches too. You had some people that really inspired you and moved you along. Did any of them stand out in college or in high school that just stand out and jump out at you like, man, it was so great to have those kind of coaches? But in general, they were all pretty good, right?
You know, the philosophy for Coach Bill Bland Larry Williams.
Larry Williams, great guy. Yeah,
they tried to have everybody do at least two sports, if mm-hmm. not three. And you know, they didn't want us to just focus on one thing.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted us to be well-rounded. And I believe that was the start of my competition and understanding training and being well-rounded as an athlete.
Right. I did want to recognize your service to our country and thank you for heading into the military for a few years and doing that service, which was also takes a lot of skill and a lot of stick-to-itiveness, as they say. So that's a interesting grind to be in the military for as many years as you were. So
yes,
that was a good experience. So thank you again for your service. So, Chris, you led some teams to state championships in 99, 2011, 2018, three different decades. That's kind of a rarity as well. What does it say about your ability to adapt and keep players motivated through those years as you had different sets of talent come through, but you were still able to win some state championships?
Right. I think it speaks to just the continuity of the program. I try to be very, very consistent with how I ran things, and so everybody knew what to expect. Again, like I said, the feeder programs have been tremendous in the area. So we never really had that major dip in talent. We kind of had that pipeline coming through, so that helped out. And what I try to do in my practice sessions is just try to get them as many reps as possible to do whatever they, you know, what we were doing. And with each practice, I try to do something live to where, I put them through an adverse situation to where they're ready to compete, when the situation happens, whether it be a state, seventh inning, bottom of the seventh inning, or whatever it takes. So I tried to make practices hard to where they would be prepared for when the games happen, and it wasn't going to be the first time that they've experienced that situation. But, just been blessed.
Well, that's great. We're speaking with a couple of the inductees to the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame, Walt Haywood from the wonderful Santa Rita High School, and Chris Fanning from Sarita High School, coach and also athlete down there, and Vice President of the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame, Dale Lopez. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the induction ceremony that's coming up and how these gentlemen will join a list of about 400 other important athletes who have done good work here in Southern Arizona and continue to keep the legacy of athletes and sportsmanship alive in our community. You're listening to The Morning Voice. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. And Matt, we're going to have to go down to Tucson Eat Yourself this weekend and eat ourselves silly. We got to go.
Okay. All right.
As it is said, it is written, it is done.
You had me at food. Yeah, okay, good.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley. With us is Walt Haywood and Chris Fanning, and they're with new inductees into the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame, and then also Dale Lopez, who's the vice president. Dale, why don't you run down some of the inductees that are coming, going to be inducted in the ceremony coming up.
Okay, I'll just quickly mention who they are, and you're welcome to go to the website pcshf.org and check out more information on them.
Right.
Mark Barcelo, Catherine Bertine, of course, Coach Chris Fanning, who's here with us today, Eric Finical, Walt Haywood, who's also here with us today, Coach Wayne Jones, Jeff Kern, Dan Noly, and Steve Owen, who will be our first judo athletes in the hall. Colin Porter, Tommy Steele, Phil Wright, and our two teams, the Sunnyside 92-93 boys basketball team and the Catalina Foothills 96-97 girls basketball team. The neat thing about the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame is we don't just have athletes and coaches. We also have reporters, officials, organizers, anyone important to sports in Tucson. And we don't just focus on the people who are known around the world like Lute Olson and Steve Kerr and Sean Elliott, but we also have people who have dedicated their lives to youth sports in Tucson, like myself and Jim Markert, Henry Barasa, and Tommy Steele, who's going in this year. He's an assistant football coach. He's always been an assistant coach, but he's been doing it for 37 years.
Yeah, it's great the diversity that you have of different kinds of sports, and it's not, like you say, it's just not football and Division I basketball and that kind of stuff, where it's all different sports, all different levels, and it's even little peewee coaches all the way up to Division I coaches and some professional coaches as well, so, and professional athletes. So talk a little bit, if you can, real quick about the actual induction ceremony, time, place, and how people can get involved in that.
Yes, it's going to be on Sunday, November 16th, over at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon Way. Registration will begin at 11:30, and the banquet will begin at 12:30, and you can go to pcshf.org to buy tickets.
Okay, great. And the two of the gentlemen that are with us today are going to be there, and they get a little time in front of the microphone to talk about their legacy. And so, Chris Fanning, let's start with you and just say you've had a lot of young ladies come through your softball program over the years and be a 600-plus game winner. a lot of you've influenced a lot of young people in your life. So how does it feel to be a coach to influence the lives of young aspiring adults?
It makes me feel good. I currently, my junior varsity coach is an ex-player of mine.
Great.
And I've previous to that, I've had three ex-players be assistant coaches for myself and or for the JV team. One of my ex-players just came to me a few days ago and wanted to be part of the program and as a volunteer. So that makes me feel good that they want to come back and kind of give back to, you know, what gave them, you know, like I said, just great memories and just a great opportunity. So it just makes me feel good to see them kind of coming back and trying to be a part of the program. And with other sports that I've coached, I was a football coach and I had some of my ex-players come back and help me coach football and things like that. So it's a special feeling.
So it's great for them. How does it feel for you as a person and as a coach and as a mentor to have done as well as you've done, but just to have the impact that you've had on young people's life? What does that mean to you personally?
I don't, it's hard to put into words. I guess it's gratifying to know that what I did made a difference mm-hmm. to certain people. And I try to instill the hard work, the dedication, the responsibility, all those things that gave me my opportunity when I was a high school athlete and a college athlete. And I try to instill those. Athletics is so important for everyday life and mm-hmm. just the lessons that you learn with that. So just all the lessons that I've learned when I was a player, I try to, use that and try to, instill those lessons to the players that I've coached. So that gives them a chance to be successful in life because, again, it gave me basically my whole life has been teaching and coaching and I owe everything to that.
And it's great to have your brother with you along the
Correct.
Way too.
Been a great ride. It's been a great ride.
Yeah. So Walt Haywood, you have a very great track and field legacy at Santa Rita first, and then you went up to ASU and you won two Pac-10 titles in the 4x100 relay. And I'm not sure that the gravity of that sinks into most people. That is a pretty amazing thing that you won two Pac-10 titles and that your team was the fastest on the track. And how does this just the legacy of you being an elite athlete at the prime of your athletic prowess to be able to pull something off like that? How does that make you? I'm sure you're proud of it, but how does that make you feel?
it makes you feel really good, especially reflecting on it these last couple of months. It's like, yeah, we were fast.
Yeah.
Teammates, Lamont King, Ron Brown, who's an Olympian on the 4x1 in 1984.
Right.
And I got to train with Dwayne Evans. I got to compete against Carl Lewis like almost every weekend for 2 years. It mm-hmm. was amazing. Right. As far as the accolades, we also became All-Americans. Those relay teams became All-Americans 2 years in a row mm-hmm. in the 4x1. If we put that into how it correlates to today, our men's USA team, in the Olympics, the 4x1, the last time we really did something was around 2000.
Right.
And so it's very difficult to do the 4x1 and become an All-American. I'm very elite.
And you went on and became a serviceman in the military.
Yes, sir.
And had a wonderful career there. How did sports, when you went in and decided to make that jump into the military, how did your competitive elite status in athletics kind of translate itself over to your service to our country?
So I was a Air Force medic, and the correlation between and the transition between high-level competition in NCAA sports and the military, it helps you hone in your skills because in the medical field, you want to be very good with your didactics and your knowledge and your skills. So it helped you just really focus on what you needed to do and accomplish the mission.
I think the NCAA tagline that says most of the athletes go pro in something other than the sport that they're in. They go into fields like medicine and other teaching and other things, so, and they don't necessarily their career doesn't necessarily end with them being a pro athlete the rest of their lives. So you're a good example of that.
Thank you.
Well, Dale, you got a great representation of people. We've got a good event coming up in later in November here. There's still tickets available, and people can still get involved and buy a seat, or more importantly, have a company buy a table and support the Hall of Fame, right?
Yes, and real quickly, if you'd like to nominate someone for the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame, go to our website. The deadline to nominate for next year is February 15th.
So Valentine's Day, if you're sitting around not doing anything, go on the website.
That's usually when we get most of them.
Yeah. And nominate someone you love and put them on, in the Hall of Fame. Well, we appreciate what you do, Dale, not only for the Hall of Fame, but what you've done over the last 40-plus years working with young people. And certainly you're a big, important part of our Coaches for Charity program. We have the MLK. You have the Rod Screech Classic coming up in February. We've got a couple of big events, and we're going to be talking a little bit about buying some Thanksgiving baskets to give away to 150 elementary school families in South Tucson, and you're a big part of that with Coaches for Charity. So thank you so much for all your help and what you do. Chris Fanning, congratulations to you on your induction. You're a wonderful representation of coaching in Southern Arizona. We appreciate all you do.
Thank you very much.
And Walt, congratulations to you, and well-deserved. And it was great to be in the presence of a couple of elite athletes and elite coaches, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back with some success with Hughes Federal Credit Union. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. Good Friday morning to you. This is The Morning Voice. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. For this segment, we have Mark Frieden, who is the Vice President of Cybersecurity at Hughes Federal Credit Union. Good morning, Mark. Our lives have crossed paths a couple of times, and we were talking in the green room about how we know each other. Your job is to be a part of cybersecurity for Hughes Federal Credit Union, and October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So why is this such an important time for our community?
Well, a while back, the Cybersecurity Awareness Month came about in about 2004. The National Cybersecurity Alliance and the Department of Homeland Security started that. They just picked a month arbitrarily, October, mm-hmm. and it's just to spread the word. It's important that people are educated about growing and changing cyber threat landscapes and best practices for protection against threats. And this is a shared responsibility between individuals, businesses, and cybersecurity experts. Having your identity stolen and getting your bank account hacked have long-term negative effects on your livelihood and well-being, as you might imagine.
Absolutely. And you deal with this every day. What are some of the most common scams today, and what can a person do?
Well, phishing is the biggest, most common. And it's various forms. There's email, text, pretending to be your bank or credit union, delivery company, a government agency like the IRS. Links can open sites that appear to be your financial institution but are not. And what they're trying to do with that is capture your credentials. And the key word there is credential harvesting, is what the community calls it.
And this comes to us in a variety of different ways, right?
Yes. Yeah. So you could have an email that's tailored to look like an urgent message. Maybe it shows that you paid a bill that you've never heard of, mm-hmm. and trying to get you to respond. These are also texts tailored to be maybe from a delivery company, something about a missed delivery. They're just trying, and also phone calls is another type of phishing. Calls typically have like a caller ID that people, you know, always refer to their caller ID, and that can be spoofed quite easily. Mm-hmm. So it's not something you can rely on. Threat actors can also use AI now and sound like anyone.
Mm-hmm. They can sound like your kid. They can sound, you know, just like they recreate voices. And so it sounds like it's your boss, or it sounds like it's someone that you know, and it's not.
Yes, and I've actually sat in on sessions where we've practiced and had demos of that, and yes, it sounds exactly like the person.
Right. What can you do? I realize that these things come at you fast and furious over time. What can we do as, you know, we're members of Hughes Federal Credit Union, and we get something that appears to be from Hughes Federal Credit Union? What do we do if we get something and we're kind of
I don't know if this is really what it appears to be.
So the first thing is to, I like the catchphrase here that I've made up, resist the urgency.
Mm-hmm.
Pause and verify requests before acting, because they use scare tactics. They try to get you to respond and without thinking. Never click on email links that you don't recognize. Never respond to unknown emails. Don't answer unknown phone calls. You can hover your mouse over links and see that where that link's going to take you.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something that you expect or not? This is a kind of unique one. Create a family password, a verbal password that only your family knows.
Mm-hmm.
This way, if someone calls sounding like your family, they're definitely not going to know the password. And then a big one that we see a lot is people giving out their one-time passcodes that mm-hmm. they get for their online banking and multi-factor. Never give out that one-time passcode. We would never ask for it. Your financial institution would never ask for it.
Right. What happens if I clicked on something and I go, oops, I just clicked on something. I don't think it's real. What do I do then?
First thing I would do is change your password. That's mm-hmm. the biggest thing. And then contact your financial institution immediately with all the details. You may be asked for a screenshot, which is very helpful to your financial institution's cybersecurity team, like myself. You may want to contact law enforcement, and also you may consider subscribing to some identity protection services.
Right. Our guest this morning on The Morning Voice is Mark Frieden. He's the Vice President of Cybersecurity at Hughes Federal Credit Union. So we talked a little bit about AI. How has AI affected cybercrime and made it so realistic that this is difficult for the novice to discern the difference between what's real and what's not?
Well, AI is interesting because it makes tasks easier for the threat actors, but it also makes it easier for us. So it works kind of in both directions. Emails, texts, voice messages are harder to spot fakes. They sound real, hence the family password.
Mm-hmm.
Phishing emails are more polished now. They're no longer misspelling, words are no longer misspelled. Awkward sentences are now look completely normal. Deep fakes, both visual and audio. So this is the phone scam. And this is a really interesting one. AI chatbots can carry on convincing mm-hmm. conversations with thousands of victims at the same time. That's really scary.
Right, it's got its tentacles out there talking to multiple people at the same time, and they're all thinking they're talking to one person or that they're talking to a human being behind a computer when they're really talking to an AI chatbot.
Correct.
It also helps, though security can be helped by AI. We can use AI to help us in our own defense system for these fake emails and fake texts and those kind of things. Tell us a little bit about that.
So your cybersecurity teams work with AI as well. They power a lot of the tools to be able to spot unusual activity patterns that we wouldn't normally spot, and something that would spot these things sooner than later. Puts a lot of urgency on it. AI can be used to detect and block suspicious emails before they hit your inbox. And AI helps cybersecurity teams detect threats faster, like I was saying, and respond faster to the threat.
Right. You talked about a family password, but that's the first line of defense. One is obviously don't give out your password, but creating passwords that are not easily guessed by an AI robot, chatbot, whatever, and one that a human being couldn't pick up, like your birthday or Main Street 123, that kind of stuff, those simple ones that we've been taught about. Complex passwords are good, right?
Yes, correct. We also talk about passphrases. Words that don't go together are a good password that are not a sentence, and then you put a few special characters in between. But using a password manager is key. The funny thing is most people use a password manager already. It's like a document on their phone.
Right.
And nothing's encrypted. But an official paid for, there's a slight charge usually for these. A password manager will help you not only save your password securely, but also generate very, very random passwords. And, for example, you don't have to know these passwords. I know maybe three passwords.
Mm-hmm.
All the rest of my hundreds and hundreds of other passwords are all in my password manager.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about, I'm intrigued about the family password. You just come up with a creative, something that everybody knows, and you just try to keep it within the family, and if they're someone's on the phone saying that there's somebody, you ask them for that password, right?
Is correct. Something, it could be a phrase or just a word, and you could have a family, little family meeting and talk about it to make sure everybody's, you know, familiar with it. And you can change it. Businesses do this.
Right.
Businesses will, you know, somebody calls you and says, I'm from the IT department, and you don't recognize their voice, you can ask them for the daily password. Hopefully your business does that, or monthly password, or whatever it is. And that will identify the person.
And you hear a click.
Exactly.
Yeah, they don't know the password, so they're off right after that. Well, that's great. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back after the break. We'll talk a little bit more about passwords and how do we keep our devices and computers safe and our bank accounts, which are important, and all of our other financial information is important. Our guest this morning is Mark Frieden. He's the Vice President of Cybersecurity at Hughes Federal Credit Union. Hughes is one of our fantastic sponsors of the Wonder Series, which is the 8 o'clock hour where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI. We'll be back after a word from our great sponsors with Mark Frieden from the Vice President of Cybersecurity at Hughes. You're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am Dr. Ed Ackerley, your host for Success Stories on Friday morning, and then Wonder at 8 o'clock, where we talk about the good things at the University of Arizona, sponsored by one of our great friends, Hughes Federal Credit Union. We happen to have Mark Frieden, Vice President of Cybersecurity of Hughes Federal Credit Union, with us. Welcome again, Mark.
Thank you.
Good morning to you. And so we were talking about passwords for families and so forth, and how they're the first line of defense, and how you create a meaningful password. Let's talk a little bit about, guilty as charged, I have passwords that I've had for a long, long time, and they're in my system, and they just kind of, I go to the grocery store, and my password on the grocery store thing is one I've had for 5, 6, 7, 10 years. That's probably not a good thing, right? Should probably change them?
Correct, yes. We've strongly recommend not using the same password. One of the big reasons is that your grocery store, your pizza rewards, they don't have the same due care with your information as, for example, your bank or your credit union. So you don't want to use your credit union password for online banking as the same password as your pizza rewards.
Right.
You want to make sure that's different. And a password manager will help you do that.
And also, you talked about identity theft, and once it happens, to get or if to keep it from happening, to use one of these great services that they are scouring the dark web full time, trying to see if you've been compromised, right? And that's an important part of your defense system, is to actually pay for a subscription to make sure that you're on those, whether it be through a credit bureau or whether it be through some third party that's trusted, that can help you keep your information safe.
And certainly you can do it proactively. A lot of people do this after the fact.
Right. It's kind of a little late then, right?
A little late.
Yeah.
Got to remember that the more random, the more times you use multi-factor, the better you're going to be. Multi-factor is becoming the standard now. And yes, multi-factor can also be defeated. And that's, you know, using something you know, something you have. You know your password. You have a one-time passcode, or you have something on your phone that generates a number and an application.
And you have to plug it back in order to get through, right?
Right. Yeah. And that can be defeated. However, the fact that you're using MFA makes it much, much more difficult for the threat actors.
Right. So most of us have a couple of things. We've got a phone. We've got a computer on our desk, maybe. We might have a tablet or a laptop computer that we travel with. And maybe we even have a watch or some other device that is, or a game system at home for the kids. And so we have all these places where even a ring system or a online security system that's attached to the web could also be compromised, and they've heard about that, Alexa and those kind of things. So how do you keep all your devices and computers safe so that you're kind of have an umbrella protection of coming at you from a variety of different places?
Well, besides antivirus, anti-malware software, which again is something you normally will have to pay for, a small amount of money, same thing with a password manager. Besides that, keeping your machines and your systems patched and up to date. Security flaws are often exploited by threat actors to gain access to your phone, your tablet, your computer. Also, another thing to consider is that public Wi-Fi that doesn't require a password, that just uses a simple password, for example, the name of the Wi-Fi, which I've seen, should be avoided. Use cellular data instead, or use a private VPN.
And even when you're paying with your phone at retail establishments and so forth, if you're using a phone app to pay for something, that can be captured too. I've heard of stories of people being at gas pumps and they're paying with their phone, and then 20 minutes later they got a charge at Walmart that they and how did they get that? They got that off of the skimming your number off of the gas pump. So got to be aware of what's happening in the universe around you, right? And be just sensitive to what you're doing.
Yeah, and I recommend at gas stations, if they have tap to pay, to use that. That is more secure. Also, one thing I do is I put my wallet over the keypad and just type the numbers of my PIN in, you know, without looking. Because if I can't see the keypad, neither can a hidden camera somewhere.
Right.
So you're protecting your PIN that way.
That's a great idea. Great idea. We're speaking with Mark Frieden. He's the Vice President of Cybersecurity at Hughes Federal Credit Union. You got a lot of things to protect at the credit union. You've got your employees, of course. They're all working diligently and corresponding via computer in the digital space all the time. And then you've got these thousands of people that are members. And so your job is really important. And you also interact with other credit unions and other financial institutions, banks and insurance companies and paying mortgages and all the things that you do. Your job is 24/7, nonstop, to keep the wall up so that you can keep your customers safe and your guests that come into your branch safe, right?
Correct. And the saying that we always live by is that threat actors only have to win once. We have to win every time.
Right.
And we work with other institutions in cooperative manner where we're both looking at threats and so on at the same time. Maybe one credit union saw something that came in, and then we're able to block it ahead of time because they're telling us about it. So we have these groups that share information, share threat information like that.
If I had some concern as a member of Hughes, where would I go? And I guess somebody else who's not a member of Hughes could access this information, but where would they go to get your expertise to help them navigate through what they should set up and how they should do it?
Well, we have a website. It's HughesFCU, so federalcreditunion.org/other/fraud-protection, and fraud-protection is all lowercase.
And what is in that? What kind of stuff is in there?
A lot of these tips that I've been mentioning, and it's updated. So I work with marketing quite a bit, and we update these things as new threats come out.
And so, if you're not a member of Hughes, can you access that and kind of look at it as a community service and let people see what you have in place there?
You can.
And then if you're a member, you can be rest assured that you and your team are working 24/7 to make sure their money and their investments are safe, right?
Correct. You can access it. We'd prefer you become a member, but right. You can access it.
Right.
We also, in cybersecurity, we really want to hear from the members if they see any fraud. We get some of our threat intel from our own staff, from our own members, from family members of staff. It's very helpful. Mm-hmm. And we do have ways of taking down these bad sites, taking down the bad phone numbers.
And like you said, if you can take a picture of it, a screenshot, if you can document it in some way, so you're not just verbally saying what happened, but you can actually show some evidence of this is what I think happened, and this is what I saw, and this is what happened, then that gives you some leverage to maybe go back in and see what you can do to help block and clean up that mess, right? So when they do report something to you, it's kind of anonymously, right? They're not the deep fake's not going to come and get them because they reported something to the cybersecurity team or anything like that, is it? There's probably minimal, so they should not be afraid to tell you what's going on.
Yeah, correct. They can you can report whatever you need, you know, whatever you're seeing that's suspicious. It's definitely good to report it, and then we'll take action as deemed necessary. Also, we also want to know what the scale of this threat may be. Is it just one person reporting it, or is it 100 people reporting
it? Right. Well, if you have concerns about your accounts, Mark Frieden's the guy to talk to. He's the Vice President of Cybersecurity at Hughes Federal Credit Union, one of our great sponsors of The Morning Voice. We thank you for all you do for the members and to keep them safe and our community at large. And we thank Hughes Federal Credit Union for all they do for the community as well. This is The Morning Voice, and we appreciate all that you do and all that our listeners do to keep Tucson a vibrant and successful place. So thanks for being with us this morning, Mark. You're listening to The Morning Voice on KVOI 1030 AM, trusted local news and talk. We'll be back after the break with Wonder from the University of Arizona.
Welcome to The Morning Voice. This is Friday. That means it's Wonder, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. Matt, I will be up early and have the tube ready to go with kegs and eggs.
9 a.m.
We're going to watch that game and enjoy a win, a good Wildcat win. Best of luck to Coach Brennan and the team. Indeed. They looked awesome last game. It was sad that we lost in the last second there in that double overtime, but it was well worth it, wasn't it? It was a great game. Yeah, we had a good time. Even though we got a little wet, it was kind of fun. And last night, I got to go to the Faculty Luminary Awards at the University of Arizona, President Garamella, Provost Prelock. It was amazing to look at a couple of dozen people getting distinction. Our friend Lad Keith, lots of people have already been on the show. I hope to invite all of them to the show over the coming weeks. And a couple of Regents professors were presented last night, which was amazing. Their work is just legendary. We're going to get those two on, hopefully. And I had a good moment, a brief moment, but a good moment with President Garamella. And I just told him, hey, President, we're praying for you, and good luck with the decision that you have to make. I think it's the single most consequential decision that the U of A's had to make in maybe 100 years. And if the money from the federal government stops flowing to the U of A, it could be very consequential and could have ripple effects into the future long after President Trump is no longer president. So we just hope that today's meeting with the Board of Regents is powerful. So, well, this is The Morning Voice, and we are sponsored today by Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue and our friends at Hughes Federal Credit Union. We welcome Dr. Laura Miller, Professor of Mathematics, Professor of Biomedical Engineering, and a member of the graduate faculty at the University of Arizona. Good morning.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, well, we were just talking. You and I happened to participate in a hearing town hall session with Provost Prelock. She was heading around campus in her first couple of months to talk about to listen to what is going on across campus, and you and I were in that meeting. A very informative meeting, wasn't it? It was great to have the provost listening to what we had to say.
It was. So it was awesome to have her with so many of our faculty and all the great ideas that were coming from the faculty on helping undergraduate education in particular at the U of A.
Yeah. One of the things that the Morning Voice is predicated on is I lovingly say that people drive down Speedway and look over at the red brick buildings and they don't really know what's going on there. There's thousands of things going on every day that affect our lives in ways untold. And one of the things I had suggested at the meeting was I teach over at Eller. One of my assignments is at the Eller College, and it's under the underpass on the north side of Speedway where the medical and law and aerospace engineering are. And I said, you know, we call it Eller Island lovingly because sometimes we get stuck, the mathematics students sometimes get stuck in their building and we get stuck in our buildings. And what I had suggested was that the students also need to know what's going on the other side of campus. And so I talked with my dean a little bit, Dean Karthik Cannon, a little bit about this, about how we can maybe, as simple as a field trip, if you want to call it that, to go from the Eller McClellan Hall over to the engineering building or over to the mathematics building and exchange what are you doing and what's your major and what are you looking forward to do and so forth, and have that kind of interchange. So hopefully that'll come about. I think that's a thing that over the years I've always thought would be important. So it was good that we were together in that room and got to meet each other and share a little bit about mathematics and biomedical engineering. Tell me about your career. What got you to the University of Arizona?
Yeah, well, I have been sort of in between multiple fields my whole life, I think. So I've also, I started out in biology as an undergrad, and I thought I would get a PhD in zoology and detoured into mathematics. So one thing that really drew me to Arizona was just how interdisciplinary it is. And I think in particular, the graduate interdisciplinary programs. So these are graduate programs not in a department. The one in applied mathematics has faculty from many different departments and colleges, so students can come in and study mathematics, but then work with someone in geoscience or ecology and evolution, mechanical engineering, and that's really, you know, quite rare, I would say, and something I would have liked to have done as a grad student to really be in between so many different departments and meeting so many scientists.
You got
to
get me over there and talk to them about creativity and leadership and things they need to be to do in order to be successful in business after they graduate. So we should have some discussion on that as well.
Yeah, that would be excellent. We have a training program for the grad students, and a talk like that would fit right in.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what we were talking about earlier, that mathematics is so important to, I said last night that all of those faculty members who were receiving the Luminary Awards last night, every one of them, mathematics affects their research and their lives on a daily, all of us, from stoplights to the music we hear on the radio to a recipe. It's all based on mathematics, right? And so mathematics permeates every part of our life.
That's right. And we actually have an annual public lecture in math called Math is Everything. So I think that fits right in. And it's also one of the reasons that drew me to mathematics as well, is because you can really work on so many different types of problems. I think you mentioned earlier about football.
Right.
So one project that it never made it off the ground, but would have been fascinating at my previous university was looking at the flags in the wind on the football stadium, and then constructing a mathematical model that would help the kicker know how to kick based on the wind direction from the flags, which isn't just, you know, the flags are blowing northwest.
Right.
Because a lot of complicated fluid dynamics happens within the stadium.
And the wind circulates and goes different directions. Even though it's blowing one direction outside the stadium, when it gets into the bowl, it kind of moves in a different direction sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a very complicated math problem with a long history and aerodynamics. So
our good friend Tyler Loop, who was the kicker for the U of A, kicked a 62-yard field goal last season. It was the longest field goal in the history of Arizona Stadium. And I'm sure he probably could have kicked it 70 yards that night. It was an amazing kick. But he could use some help. He's going to be one of those guys that kicks a 70-yarder in the pros. He's with the Ravens right now. He's doing a great job. Well, let's talk a little bit about the intersection of mathematics and biology. Can you describe what that means? So we're talking about representations of mathematics and the living things in biology. How do those two come together?
That's right. So I think folks are more comfortable thinking about math and physics and that interplay. But everything in biology can be described by an equation. We may not know what that equation is yet, but that I believe that equation is out there. Once you have a good model for living systems, then you can make predictions. You can ask what if questions easily. So let's take, for example, the human heart. And perhaps we're looking at a different type of artificial valve. Before we actually implant that valve into the heart, we could develop a mathematical model, a simulation, and test what would happen if we put this particular valve in this particular person, which is one, I think, really exciting area of mathematics and biology connection is patient-specific mathematical modeling and simulation.
And we already use a lot of math. We have our blood pressures based in mathematics, our heart rate, things that people are familiar with. Even, you know, I track my steps every day, and so it's a numerical number that I shoot for each day. And so we already use math a lot in biology to help us explain things and understand things. But this would take it to the next level and do some equation building to help understand or describe things that we see in the biological world.
That's right.
That's great. What are some of the biggest challenges in translating complex math into real-world biomedical equations? First off, obviously, people don't think about it in that way, so convincing people that a mathematical equation isn't a good way to describe a biological phenomenon, but what are some of the challenges that you face?
Yeah, so there's an old saying that all mathematical models are wrong, but some are useful. So the living world is really too complicated to have equations that describe everything. So you have to pick. Mm-hmm. And the real world is noisy and highly nonlinear. You can have a very small change in something like the way action potentials are propagated in your heart to cause the heart to contract. And one of those small changes can create a big change. So you have to make choices when you develop, when you write down the equations. And in doing that, you're losing some of that complexity. So you have to make the right decision. So what is a model that you can write down, you can solve on paper or numerically, but still captures the essence of what you're trying to describe? And I would say that is almost always the biggest challenge.
Our guest today on Wonder on The Morning Voice is Dr. Laura Miller. She is a professor of mathematics, a professor of biomedical engineering, and a member of the graduate faculty at the University of Arizona. So interesting that we use mathematics in so many different parts of our life, and we probably don't even recognize. Even I was just thinking of getting into your car, all the math that goes into just moving from one place to another place is all about mathematics. Simple thing like picking up your phone and dialing out numbers to get you to another person or to text somebody, that's all based on mathematics. So mathematics is around us. So describing biological things in mathematical terms should kind of actually come kind of normal, even though it might be a little bit hard to do. It's kind of a normal thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the more exciting things that I'm doing in terms of teaching people about that translation are a couple of classes at the U of A. One of them I'm teaching this semester is Math 119A. So that's biological calculus or calculus for the life sciences. And it's for biology and life science majors. It's very different from regular calculus. The students do a lot of advanced mathematics, which is fabulous. And they learn about how to write down models that could describe populations, disease dynamics, the way that you would administer drugs, biochemical systems. And I think the students are always amazed at how much math can be used and all the, you know, the fabulous applications in medicine and life science.
Great. Well, we'll be back after the break here, and we'll talk some more about mathematics and biomedical engineering and the good things going on at the University of Arizona. This is Wonder on The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice, ABC 123. We're talking mathematics and biomedical engineering on The Morning Voice. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. On Fridays, we talk about the good things happening at the University of Arizona, and we call it Wonder. And it's sponsored by Hughes Federal Credit Union and our good friends at Caruso's Italian Restaurant on 4th Avenue. And Dr. Laura Merrill, here is a gift certificate to our friends from Caruso's Italian Restaurant. We thank you for being here today, and they welcome you to their restaurant. They're good friends of ours and good friends of The Morning Voice. So,
awesome. Thank you very much.
We're talking with Dr. Laura Miller. She is a professor of mathematics, professor of biomedical engineering, and a member of the graduate faculty at the University of Arizona. You know, University of Arizona has a strong research community, and it takes a lot of folks to be doing research, and we need to have some students engaged in the process of STEM fields and mathematics and engineering. How do you encourage the young women and men that you come in contact with to be involved in the STEM fields?
So I really believe in project-based learning and experiential learning. Anything that we can do in the classroom and outside to have the students working in problems directly, collaborating with scientists from other fields, and thinking about how they can use their own disciplinary knowledge to solve bigger problems. And a couple of examples of this, especially I think the importance of some of the Arizona experiment stations and other facilities. At Biosphere 2, we have had a number of mathematics undergrads and graduate students involved. One of my own projects is in collaboration with Diane Thompson in geoscience with the B2 Ocean. And we have students from mathematics, ecology, and evolution, geoscience, all working there and thinking about within the BS2 Ocean, how can we help corals, and then how can we take those lessons for restoring coral reefs out in the world. Another example of this is at the Elmira Equine Center, where there are veterinary students, pre-vet students, animal science, and now mathematics and engineering students thinking about problems in veterinary science, how mathematics and engineering can help, and also, you know, thinking about interactions between horses and humans. So I think when you have broad problems of importance to the world and cultures, that that also broadens participation in these fields. And just going beyond sort of classical examples in mathematics, looking at, you know, aerodynamics of airplanes and rockets, which is also quite fascinating, but thinking of all the different aspects of how math and engineering can be applied, and then getting students involved directly in those activities, participating in research, working with people from other fields. And that is, I think, what I've seen, you know, most of all, getting students, particularly from either under-resourced or underrepresented groups, more involved in research.
So if there was a young person out there, or a grandparent or parent who is trying to help point their student in the right direction, they could reach out to the mathematics department or to you personally and have this discussion about why mathematics is so important to the overall benefit of humankind, but also in terms of just understanding what a STEM career could look like and what that would be and how they could. And they don't have to be the brightest mathematician in high school and so forth in order to get into this, because it's skills that you learn and pick up along the way, and you can teach them how to do math and calculus and all those things. Certainly they have to have an acumen for it, but and so you would encourage young people then to reach out and kind of consider this as an opportunity.
Definitely. And one thing I think that people often don't realize about mathematics is just there are so many different types of mathematics, from geometry to analysis and calculus to statistics. And not everyone is great at every type of mathematics. When I was in junior high, I was the slowest at multiplication tables. So it turns out I'm not very good at arithmetic.
Right.
But I really love calculus in particular, and sort of the fields that build on that. So I think even if students feel like they aren't great at math, maybe it's just not the right type of math they're working with, or they haven't, it just hasn't clicked yet. But I've worked with a number of students who found their stride in mathematics, either becoming mathematicians or working with mathematicians or doing some math, and they've really excelled at it.
Looking ahead, what excites you most about where mathematics and biology are headed, and what the future holds for those young people that might get into the STEM fields and work in this area or work in any area that has to do with mathematics or biological engineering? What's the next year, 5 years, 10 years look like?
Yeah, so I think some of the innovations in computation and AI and machine learning are really making complex mathematics more accessible, and also enabling some of the translation of, you know, new mathematical tools and engineering tools to other fields. So if you're a medical doctor or also a veterinarian, you could do patient or animal-specific computations, ideally with easy-to-use programs, and use that to guide your decisions with surgery. So one example is looking at airways in children or adults, and again, even in animals, taking that geometry. And if there's some sort of surgical intervention that needs to happen, you can do it in silico or on the computer first, and then make decisions about what surgical technique you might use. And this is being used, already being used, at some hospitals and at some vet practices. And hopefully that gets expanded. So I think the transfer of technology it's what I find most exciting.
That is exciting. That is exciting. Which leads me to the final question is, how do you define wonder? We talk about wonder, the good things going on at the U of A, and I was at the Luminaries last night and saw all these faculty members who were doing great work. How do you define wonder?
So I think when creativity meets understanding, so I think all of us have a lot of creativity within us, but we don't know how, maybe what it means or how to implement it. And when those two things intersect and you have the tools to implement your creative ideas, that leads to wonder.
That's great. You know, as I was sitting there yesterday afternoon watching all those great instructors and faculty members and researchers getting those awards, my mind just went, the more I learn and the more knowledge I get, the more I realize I don't know. And I think that's part of the growth of an academician, is to know that there's always wonder out there and always things that we can do better and think about. So we appreciate the guru. And thank you for all you do for the young people, inspiring them to a life of mathematics or a life of biomedical engineering, or putting those two together and coming up with something unique. Special thanks to our guest for Wonder this morning, Dr. Laura Miller, a professor of mathematics, professor of biomedical engineering, and a member of the graduate faculty at the University of Arizona. This is Wonder, sponsored by Caruso's Italian Restaurant and Hughes Federal Credit Union, and you're listening to The Morning Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. This is Wonder, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. One of the tie-ins to our next guest is we made a call out to some of the students at the U of A to come assist with the marketing and sales, and a young lady from one of the classes is now an employee of the PAD, and she works at the university, or works at the PAD and goes to the University of Arizona. So a nice bridge between applied learning, as they say, of learning on the job. Our guest this morning for Wonder is Reva Mackey. She and her husband own the PAD, which is a wonderful facility in downtown Tucson. And so welcome, Reva. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
For listeners who haven't been to the PAD yet, can you tell us a little bit about what makes it such a unique, exciting place in Tucson?
Yeah. Well, I would say we're the largest indoor racket sport facility in town. We have 9 pickleball courts, 7 paddle or padel courts, and table tennis tables. We also have a bar and a cafe and an event space.
That's great. And tell us a little bit, for those people that aren't exactly familiar with padel, or some Americans call it paddleball, but it's actually, I guess, padel, depending on where you are in the world. They're both, although they were created at about the same time, pickleball is one of the fastest growing sports in America, but padel is one of the fastest growing sports around the world. So what's the difference between, what is padel or paddleball?
Yeah, well, just preface it by saying they are the two hottest, fastest growing sports around the world right now. So we've got the two of them in one spot, which is pretty exciting for us. Now, paddle, yeah, you can say it a number of ways. I am a bit old school and say paddle as an English speaker, and a lot of people call it padel, or it's very popular in Spanish speaking countries and they pronounce it a little bit different, like paddle.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a sport that is a combination of tennis or pickleball and squash, if you will. It has a net in the center of the court that divides the two sides, and you play doubles against each other. And then it has glass walls all the way around. So it leads to this wonderful form of racket sport chaos. That's the way I like to describe
it's
fun, it.
Because it's fun to watch. It's really fun to watch. Yeah, it's action-packed.
It is action-packed. The ball must go over the net, but it has to bounce before any of the walls. So some people think, oh, that's so dangerous. But you can't, if you hit it overly hard, the ball is always out. Mm-hmm. So it has to bounce before any of the walls, but then takes on the geometry after it hits any of the walls, and you can still play it back over.
That's great. So, we were just talking to Dr. Laura Miller from the University of Arizona Mathematics Department, talking about how math plays such a big role in football and baseball and basketball, in padel and pickleball. It's all about math, and it's all about how we apply that math. And as my wife says, just dink it in pickleball. So coming up on Thursday, the 23rd, we've conspired to come up with our next eat and greet for the Morning Voice. We're going to all invade the beautiful pad, come down, and be there this Thursday, the 23rd, from 5:30 to 7. So tell us a little bit about what people will see when they, if they've never been to the pad, they walk in the front door, what are they going to see, and kind of give us a visual tour of what they're going to experience when they come down to the pad on Thursday.
Okay. When you first come in the doors, you'll be in our lobby space doing our check-in with our wonderful team there at the pad. And then as you enter the doors into the courts, it's a large expanse of a space. You'll see all the courts in front of you. Bar is front and center where we'll all be. I'm sure that's where we're all going to be set up. And, and what's the word I'm looking for? Getting together as a community, which is what your show and what we're all about. And we're going to have food from the Bamboo View. We're super excited about that. And guests will be able to come in and try one of our local craft beers or wines. We're giving one drink to each guest to start their night off. And if you don't want to have alcohol, we have other things as well. We are so happy to be working with the Morning Voice to have this event happen in our space. We know you're all about connecting people in the community, Ed, and we're just happy to be a part of it. That's our goal with the pad, is we're a sport focused environment, but we have a very social setting and we're trying to build the pad family. And so this is a good way to do that.
Yeah. Well, this event is open to the public, to all of our listeners. You don't have to have put on a pair of athletic shoes and gym clothes and come out and play. You can just come down and watch, and you can see padel going on over in the seven paddleball courts, or you can watch some people playing pickleball, or you can jump behind a table tennis and play a little table tennis while you're interacting with other people. So the idea is to come down and just check it out and see what it is, and then have a couple of, I know Matt will be there, and we'll be at the bar holding down court at the bar, because that's the most important part of what Matt and I do. And so we'll have that experience going on. When we come back after the break, I'll talk a little bit more about the Thanksgiving box giveaway. But you opened back in March, and how has traffic been? How have the leagues been forming? How has individual daily play happened? How are people getting along down at the pad, and how has business been?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's growing every day. We're looking to get new people, get the word out that we exist, and our pad family grows every week. Our leagues are running in both pickleball and padel, and we keep adding offerings to what we're doing with our programming, different classes and such. We have our first big pickleball tournament at the pad that we're running ourselves next weekend. Mm-hmm. And we have a number of events upcoming. Actually, today is Friday. Tomorrow we have game night, mm-hmm. something that one of our team members is championing and playing board games. We have a Halloween event, and we've got a U of A faculty event coming up mid-November, a student night coming up mid-November, and a lot of fun things on the calendar.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, pickleball is, I can attest to it, as my wife is a regular at your place, it's a social experience as well as an athletic experience, and it does. And it's for all levels. You don't have to be the elite athlete. We interviewed some elite athletes this morning on the Morning Voice in the 7 o'clock hour. You don't have to be at that level to play pickleball. You can just come down with your friends and enjoy it and have some fun, or you can get really involved in it. I kind of liken it to, we have some elite golf courses in Tucson, some premier golf courses, and people come from all over the world to play golf here in Tucson. And, some people are members and they play every single day and they, count their handicap and all that, and other people like me go out and once in a while play at some of these beautiful courses and just have fun. And that's kind of how it is at the pad. You can be really into it and be in a league and play seven nights a week or you can just be like a person who comes down once in a while and jumps on a court and has some fun. So it's, you've got your, anybody, any age, doesn't matter what age you are, you can come down and enjoy the pad.
That's right. We'll get, we might even get you on a court someday, Ed.
Yeah, I'll be there on Thursday. I'll be on a court, but I'll probably have, instead of a racket in my hand, I might have a cold Barrio Brew in my hand, or a Barrio Blonde. So that's great. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. And when we come back, I want to talk about a special feature of this this Thursday's Eat and Greet. We'll talk a bit about the Thanksgiving box giveaway that we're doing for families who need it in the Thanksgiving time frame. We're talking to Reva Mackey, the owner of The Pad. We'll be back after the break. You're listening to The Morning Voice. Matt, I just have to say, we're a worldwide organization here at Bustos Media.
We sure are.
Do
tell.
We are speaking to Reva Mackey, and she happens to be sitting in Calgary, Canada right now. And she's on her way back to Tucson this weekend. But so we have international reach here at The Morning Voice.
Bring some cool weather back with you, please, Reva.
Yeah, they had a skiff of snow the other day.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah. We're speaking with Reva Mackey. She and her husband Andrew are the owners of The Pad down in downtown Tucson, south of downtown Tucson, at 300 South Tool. It's kind of in between. I call it in between. Give people kind of a marker in between, say, Hotel Congress and Barrio Brewing. It's right there on Tool Avenue, next to the Rocks and Ropes kind of place. And it's a big, giant facility with seven padel courts and nine pickleball courts, and we're going to be there this coming Thursday from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at The Pad, and we're going to have listeners, and we're going to have lots of people involved, Bamboo View. I did want to talk about one little thing that we're doing as a special event there. Over the last, oh goodness gracious, I think it's been now 8 years, we've been collecting through Coaches for Charity. We collect donations from listeners and from community members, and we've built up our number of boxes that we give away. We give away 150 boxes. This started with my good friend Councilman Richard Fimbres, who is now retired, and but he and I conspired to come up with a way to get 150 boxes now to six different schools in the southern part of Tucson, South Tucson, and we collect money, $45 a box, and that provides a meal for four. And it's created for us by our good friends, John Hone, Chef John Hone at the Gap Ministries. He prepares the boxes with his culinary team, and we deliver them on Wednesday before Thanksgiving to each of the six schools. And Val Romero, Sixto Molina, myself, Jesse Lugo, jump in a truck and drive around and deliver to 25 to six different schools. And it's been just a very rewarding thing. We do it for what we can give back. And so on the 23rd, we're going to have a sample box there, and we're going to ask our listeners when they come by if they'll scan the code and contribute whatever they can. But $45 gets us a full box. And we've already sold, before we even start the Thursday event, we've already sold 30 boxes. So we got 120 more to go, and we're doing well. So we thank you and Andrew for letting us kind of piggyback on the event and have Coaches for Charity there doing that. So let's talk a little bit about, if I'm interested in The Pad and want to be a social member or a league member and come down, what do I got to do, and how do I get involved with The Pad?
Well, you can
come Thursday.
Come and do it. Yeah, on Thursday. Come and see us at The Pad. We have a number of different memberships available to people. We also have drop-in for both sports, and widely open to anyone that wants to interact with The Pad in any way. You can go to our website, www.thepadtucson.com. We have social media on Instagram and Facebook for The Pad Tucson. And once you're sort of into the community, jumping on one of our WhatsApp community chats or Team Reach, you can see all of our calendar and scheduled events through those two apps. And
what if I'm a novice and I'm just have to be honest with you, I've picked up a pickleball paddle because they've been in my house and I've picked them up, but I've never, to my knowledge, hit a ball with one. And I don't really, I see pickleball on my TV all the time because she's watching pickleball on TV. But I don't really know the rules. I don't really know how to play other than hit it over the net and hope that the other person doesn't hit it over the net back to you. So I don't really know the rules. I don't really know much about it, even though my wife is going to nationals and so forth. How does a guy like me, who's never played the game before, doesn't know anything about it, and just knows kind of the periphery, what do you have for me? If I've never done it before, what would I do?
Well, we have intro classes for both padel and pickleball. And I'm going to throw something out there to anyone listening out there today. If you can come to us with three friends, then we have a special offer for you. So if that is intriguing to you and you're looking to be introduced to padel or pickleball, send me an email. It's Riva, R-I-V-A, at thepadtucson.com. And we will get you out on the courts. Otherwise, we have intro classes that are listed on our website, and you can sign up through our booking app, and we'll get you out in the court and teach you the rules and get you going.
You and your husband are collegiate athletes, and now you're making a living doing sports, and you're picking up padel and doing well with pickleball itself. And it's a fun facility, fun to be around all the activity down at the pad in downtown Tucson.
I mean, I think it's a pretty great place to be. I spend most of my time there, so
most of
our
waking
family is there a lot.
I tease you. I always tell you to tell my wife I said hello, because I think you see her more than I do sometimes. It's pretty funny. So, hey, thank you so much for being with us today, coming to us from Canada today. That was Riva Mackey. She is the co-owner of the Pad Tucson. We have our eat and greet this Thursday at 5:30 p.m. to 7 at the Pad, 300 South Tool. And it's very easy to get to. If you're coming from the east and you're heading down towards downtown, you just make the loop and come across the bridge at 4th Avenue there, and boom, you're right there. It's right in front of you, and it's very easy to get to. If you happen to miss that turn, you can go back through and come back around the other way. But 300 South Tool, easy to get to. It'll be a great event. There'll be lots of people there. We'll have good food from Bamboo View. We'll have some of our friends from the University of Arizona will be there. We've invited the mayor. We've invited the police chief. We've invited the fire chief. Who don't know if they'll come, but we've invited them, and lots of people from downtown. So hopefully you'll be there with us too. This is The Morning Voice on KVOI. We hope to see you at the Eat and Greet on Thursday at the Pad in Tucson. Riva, thank you for being with us, and tell Andrew hello.
I will.
All right. Special thanks to Riva Mackey, and thank you all for listening today, listening to Wonder and Success Stories on KVOI, 10:30 a.m. We'll be back next week with another edition of Success and Wonder. And coming up on Monday, our good friend Lydia Aranda will be here with Rainmakers. This is The Morning Voice. See you next week.